Oh, thanks, Christina. So, hi, I'm Lisa. And I'm laughing. There's a reason I never prepare before I come, because inevitably I'm not first, and somebody's telling parts of my story all along the way. So I'm really grateful for what I just heard. There's so much that I can relate to, and God always gives me what I need anyway. And that way I wasn't worried for like days on what I'm going to say, and I didn't lose sleep last night. So I love surrendering my life over to my higher power. It has, that's the thing that's changed my life completely, is the surrender part of it. So I have, I'm maintaining a 100-pound weight loss, and got on the scale the other day, which I forgot to tell you, and was down 2 more pounds because I am still currently working toward less weight. I have no idea where, but you know, when I hit the first kind of 100 pounds, I have lots of physical changes, and I needed to kind of just let my body readjust. But I have never in my life, it's 3 years, I'm abstinent for 3 years, I've maintained this weight loss. I have the same clothes for 2 years, and it's freaking me out. And I don't have the same clothes for 2 years. I have one set of clothes in one size for 2 years, which is great because it curbs my shopping. So today the opportunity is for me to share my commitment to abstinence. And I heard it, and I was so grateful to hear it from both of the speakers. Commitment to abstinence. Abstinence isn't just the food. The food is the tiniest little piece for me. It's the first of 12 steps. So really for me, I go back to that threefold, that three-legged stool, recognizing I need a commitment to everything. Because when my will tries to dictate what I should do, I should on myself and I should on pretty much everybody else. And so for me, I have an interesting path. And each day I learn a little bit more about my path. I keep thinking I've done all this self-discovery work, and I'm finding that as a result of my staying in this program, I continue to do more self-discovery. It's something that will never end for me, but every time I do self-discovery, it brings my program stronger, it brings my abstinence stronger, and the twinkle in my eyes gets brighter. And I will tell you, I always saw myself as short, fat, and ugly, and someone no one wanted around. That is how I lived my life. I will tell you, I am many things. Short, maybe, but most people don't even recognize that I'm 5'4", because I have a personality that tends to make me appear taller. I'm well aware of it. I've owned it since I'm little, and I'm Sarah Bernhardt. So I kind of get that whole space. And as for fat, fat is relative anyway. I am not at whatever the world puts as my particular weight to be at. I'm not there. Fat's up here, and I don't feel fat anymore. I'd like to lose some more weight, health-wise, maybe my knees a little bit, a little more flexibility. But at the end of the day, I'm cool with who I am from that perspective. And actually, I found out I'm pretty. I never knew that, and it's really awkward, and I think somebody shared something before, that kind of revelation that they never said out loud. I don't say that out loud. I'm getting comfortable being in that space, recognizing that I'm pretty. So it might sound cocky to you, but it sounds freaky for me. But it's a really great way for me to be present in life, being confident with this body that my Creator gave me, and to honor it just the way I want to honor everyone else. And the more comfortable I become over my life with myself, the more comfortable I am becoming with every single person I interact with. Whether my initial instinct of I like or don't like, or it's good or it's bad, comes up, I don't care anymore, because each person brings a value in my life. I don't care what that value is. I don't always know what that value is. So the only way for me to have gone from short, fat, ugly, and suicidal since I'm 12 to moderately tall, thinner, and pretty, and just so comfortable with life and not even considering death as an option. Actually, I see myself in my 90s. Good God. So be careful, because I'm going to be around a long time. But what really changed for me is it's the commitment I have to this program, and it's to working the whole program. And abstinence for me, that's step one, and I heard it from the earlier speaker. Step one, I am powerless over everything. I no longer piece it out. I don't chunk it out. Chunk, love that word. You know, when I came in, I came in a little bit for the vanity and a little bit for the sanity. I didn't quite know there was sanity in it. I heard this word shame from my therapist. And by the way, every time she mentioned it, I wanted to punch her. Because I don't have any shame. How could I be ashamed? Well, I lived in shame. I couldn't even own that I was ashamed. I was angry at the entire world. And another little thing that I share that I have is something called terminal uniqueness. And it was perfectly worded for me at the convention. And I realized how much I believe it's all about me. Or I did. I was writing on something the other day recognizing how I spent my whole life being short, fat, and ugly, having no friends, life was so horrible, God never helped me, nobody ever helped me, my life sucks, blah, blah, blah. And I'm sitting at a table of a family who at one point in time were all 280 pounds or greater. So, and not everybody's smiling, not everybody's happy, and everybody's shoveling food in their mouth because it's 10 pounds of something and 3 pieces of everything for everybody. It was huge portions we ate. 5 people, 5 of us. But it was only me that was miserable. Really? Well, I'll tell you right now, just a little bit of my history is I have a lot of death in my family. Started when I was 5, and it's gone on. So there were 5 of us. There's 2 of us. I lost a brother at 31. He was over 300 pounds and dabbling in the drug world. No particular reason he died, none of those specific causes, but they're all contributing. I lost my dad. He was 72. Because he was diabetic and he died from a broken heart, but combination. And then my mom was diabetic. And let me tell you, she gave me a run for my money for the last 2 years. But that's where I am now. And the one brother I have left is another compulsive overeater who's always not happy with his work, not happy with this. Like all those things that I thought was only specific to me, I found out are specific to him too. So when I step back and look at it, you know what? I'm not. And then I come in today and I hear 2 stories that I can relate to on so many different levels. I'm not unique. I like not being unique anymore. It's scary to give up my uniqueness. And I love that contrary. That's now I have a whole new thing I'm taking with me because I realize that is how I get out of bed some mornings. I want to stay in bed. I like my sleep. Well, sleep is my avoidance. I have a, you know, I have this really long history of isolation, because again, it's only me. And but you know, my things that I get compulsive around to prevent life are TV, food, isolation, sleep, and reading. Did I hear that today? Pretty much. So those are my go-to places. Shopping, of course. So, you know, they don't serve me anymore. Sometimes sleep serves me when I need to regroup. And it's finding now when certain things serve me. And that's where I found my commitments going now. The commitment's going to a food plan. I have a food plan. I commit to my food plan. Am I perfect? No, I have not touched my trigger food in 3 years. Anywhere near it. I don't want to go near it. I'm afraid to go near it. I recoil like from a fire on a flame. I say that kind of more tongue-in-cheek now. I think that's how it used to be. Now I just look at it and go, ugh, I know where that's going to lead me, and it's just not interesting. So I have a food plan and an action plan. I don't call it an action plan, but there are things. When I know I need to get my butt out the door, then that's the discussion I have with my sponsor. My sponsor is my anchor when it comes to me having to set up my commitments for the day. And sometimes, I laugh too, I want to go in one direction And whether it's my sponsor, whether it's somebody else I'm talking to, whether it's my gut, which is my higher power speaking to me, I'm being told, no, you can't go that way. You can go that way if you want to, but welcome for disaster. Try this new path. So sometimes I go kicking and screaming. Most of the time I go, okay, let me try it. So what I found around for me from that is that's what I need to commit to. So to help me maintain my commitments, I need the tools. God must have known I was going to need to be like on the speaker circuit this month. This is my second, I have a third talk next week. I don't normally do this much, but I love service. So I got on Intergroup within the first couple of months because I was doing service for a friend. And that friend helped me to do service on a much greater scale. So I do Intergroup. I just got nominated for region. So I'm going to be stepping up, maybe, at another level, which is very cool. I started out doing a lot of service at my meeting. But I need to find balance there too, because somewhere along the line I had to step back from my service so other people could do service. So I had to watch what I was doing, because even I can be a compulsive service person. That's part of my defect. People pleasing and make sure everybody's happy and liking and it's all going really smoothly. I'm great at project management, setting it up, getting it organized, keeping everybody on time together and happy. I'm great at it. It's exhausting and it's not my job. And that was really hard for me to realize it's not my job. Terminal uniqueness yet again. The world is not all responsible for me. But, and I heard this earlier, there was all those years of suicide, and I'm talking every single day I woke up, that was what I wished I was. Those defects, for me, were all coping mechanisms that kept me sane as it could be and alive. Because I truly thought if I died, my entire family would fall apart. Because who would cook? Who would clean? Who would be the one fixing all the issues? Who would be the one managing this? Who would be the one getting everybody out on time? Who would be the one raising her brothers? Like, I have no idea if I did or didn't, but you know, the all-encompassing, wonderful woman I was everything. That kept me alive until I got older and it started not being so strong anymore. And I realized it wasn't serving me either. And I was having trouble with boundaries, so I had lots of dysfunctional people in my life and in my family. And I had really crazy relationships in my family, outside my family. I have been very successful at work. When you look at success being great jobs, promotions, I own my own home, I have two cars, you know, I made X dollars, I travel all over the place. I'm great. How are you? I'm great. How are you? And I heard that coming from both people before, from Kim and Hilda. And the funny part is, I'm so great. Everybody thinks I got my together. Well, yeah. I sleep from Friday to Sunday. I don't leave my house. I eat, and I do not leave the couch. I may have gotten laundry done, which, by the way, everybody was telling me, but that's a job. Like, thank God you got the laundry done. Thank God I got the laundry done. It's one room over from where my couch is. Really, on the way to the kitchen. So that is why my laundry got done. Seriously, it was the best place I could have ever put it, in hindsight. So you know what? Now it stops me from getting to the kitchen because now I just go to laundry and I sit back down. But, you know, it's really funny. Like, that... I lost my train of thought. So anyway... you know, it's just that I really did lose my train of thought. Yeah, I know, it'll come, right? So, I guess just kind of coming back to commitment, because that's really what we're talking to, is how do I commit? I have sticky notes on my medicine cabinet. And they are the same sticky notes I put up my first week in program. And those sticky notes remind me that I'm powerless over food. And then, so I start out with, God, please give me the ability, willingness and the ability to stick to my food plan today. Please give me the willingness and ability to do your will and think your thoughts and speak your words and not mine. Please give me the willingness to surrender the outcome of everything to you. And I have this other one that I added a little bit later. Please help me, I'm not going to say it right, but help me to have a heart of forgiveness and the willingness to be accepting, something in that line. But really just so that when I step in, no matter what I'm encountering, no matter who I'm encountering, no matter what the thing is that's going on, I'm okay with it. I might not be okay with it immediately because old habits really die hard and my disease is always struggling to come back out. It can't come back out if I don't let it. But the only way I cannot let it come out is by using all my tools. So I come back, and yes, I have a sponsor. I sponsor three people. Fortunately, I have a schedule that allows me to sponsor three people. They're part of my commitment because I commit to them. I will not sponsor you if I'm not abstinent. And I do not have the heart to tell a single person who wants me to sponsor them that I can't sponsor them. So I stay committed. And Ginny's going to get called out again. I have Ginny's face right here. And that face, actually right here. And that face is the face when I have a decision to make as to whether I'm going to put something in my mouth or not. Do I want to tell her? And am I willing to tell her? Honesty, she wrote me, the very first thing she wrote me when I found her miraculously as my sponsor was, honesty is important, the most important part of the program or something like that. I just interpreted it as, you better be honest with me. That's all I heard. However it was meant didn't matter because that's what I needed to hear. And I'm honest with her. I have to be. So I tell her myself. But the best part is, I'm a people pleaser. So I don't want to disappoint her. It's an asset in that effect. So I use that people-pleasing asset as saying, you know what, I don't want to disappoint them. I had three places to speak this week, and honestly, I'm chairing one of her dreams. I have to be abstinent because I can't do the service that I love doing if I'm not abstinent. I can still be part, but I really like to do the service. I love giving back. It's something that I don't know what it is I get back from it, other than just love and joy and seeing faces I don't see all the time and getting a chance to meet new faces. So there's really just this wonderful thing about it, and I get energized. And I did have some caffeine today, so bear with me. But the reality is, so those are just a couple. I write on, I read the For Today every day. That's like my book. And then I write on it. And I write on a loop. Do I do it every day? No. But I will tell you, I started slipping and sliding a little with that over the summer or early part of this season. My program got harder. And all I did was eliminate 15 minutes of stuff I do every day. So I write. I pick it back up. I know as soon as I start having a conversation about food or people or issues or something in my head, I am well aware something slipped. Something in the program slipped. And it's just a matter of time before something else slips that's not going to be pretty. So I make phone calls. I don't make as many phone calls, I guess, as some people do. But I make them when I need them. I take them when I get them. I love when I get them. And I text and I email. So I make sure I stay in communication. And sometimes when I don't, you know what? It's a little rough, but I usually send somebody. When I need to make that phone call and I don't want to pick up the phone, God sends me a call or something else. And I do a lot of other service in my life. So I'm pretty much engaged in interacting with others. And I have a lot. I'm very fortunate to have a great social system that's set up with a lot of insightful and empowering people. So I have a really great support system in my life. Anonymity, I don't know, I'm not all that anonymous either. I will maintain your anonymity, as we know. I will tell you, everybody in my life knows I'm in OA because I had no idea this existed. None, zero, except for my therapist who told me every single day for like 4 years. I had no idea. I'd never heard it from anybody else, so I'd never seen success. And of course, my therapist was this big and not in the program. So I think that's maybe partly why it wasn't so real for me. But thank God she was persistent enough. And I kept going back to her to find my way to these rooms. So I guess commitment is consistency. It's showing up. It's something I can't commit to you today that tomorrow I'm going to be this happy-go-lucky abstinent person. I can commit right now. Actually, how many people are abstinent at this moment? Voila! We have a room of abstinent people. And I was humbled hearing that when I went to my first retreat, and this woman who'd been in program, she was so elegant and so well-spoken. She was a trustee. She was going through all kinds of stuff in her life. Her talk was amazing. And I caught up with her later, and she's in the program, I guess, since it opened. And I said to her, you know, I'm so thrilled to be around, you know, people that have all these years of experience, you know, and whatever. And she looked at me, and she said to me, are you abstinent today? And I said, yes. She goes, good. We have the same amount of abstinence today. Are you working your program right now? I said, yes. She said, good. Then we're both working our program just as long. She said, it doesn't matter how long you're here. I will never, ever think that I am not a compulsive eater and that I can eat, that I won't eat tomorrow. She says, I have no idea. Don't put it near your mouth. That's all I can remember, and it still rings in my mind. And here this woman was, I think she was in her 70s, and she was talking about having just lost her husband and how on the edge she was, but how this community came and protected her when she needed protection. So, and that's because she was involved and she did service, and that service came back a millionfold. And I still have that picture of this elegant woman in my head that just reminds me every day, it doesn't matter how long I'm here, it doesn't matter how long you're here. If you have any abstinence today, wonderful. And it's an opportunity to keep moving forward with that abstinence. And the other piece on abstinence for me is emotional abstinence. I can torture any issue till it's welcoming death. And I can create whatever scenario I need to make me stay in bed, to go shopping, to eat, to read, to sleep. I can create the story. I'm amazing at it. Maybe I am a storyteller. But the reality is that never serves me well. When somebody does something to me, it isn't. I've got all this strength now, and all this knowledge, and all these tools. And my biggest tool, biggest tool, which takes seconds, is the Serenity Prayer. At a minimum, it gives me seconds to shut up. Even if I don't pay attention to the words, it stops me. It's an automatic thing that I use in every situation. Might be 40 times. Oh, that in the bathroom. I love the bathroom. There's nothing better than a good bathroom. But now I use it to pray, or to be quiet, or to be alone, or to get a minute to regroup. But that Serenity Prayer, and then after I say it, I think of the words. And the way I say the Serenity Prayer is, God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, people, places, and things. The courage to change the things I can, me, and how I show up. And the wisdom to know the difference. And that's it. It's that simple for me. And am I perfect at it? No! Do I start to react? Yes! All I know is I have relationships that have blossomed with people I never thought. I thought the few people that were close in my life, I was going to lose them because they weren't getting me. And this was when I first even got into program. It was a year before I even told some of them I was in program. And everyone else in my life knew, except for people. And, you know, when I finally told them, I got the response I was expecting. You know, like skepticism. Oh, yeah, you were so fat. You look so good now. You know, I remember when. And all this other focus on my size and my body image. But I realized that's just where they're coming from, because then I realized they're always talking about their own weight, their own body image. I said, holy crap, this has nothing to do with me. Every time they have an issue around it, it has nothing to do with me. It's all about them. And you know what? Everybody filters. Everybody filters from the space you're in. And that perception's reality, another great theme for the day, and it's a great, I live by that as well. And recognize that just because I perceive something doesn't mean it's true. Now that I know, this program has taught me, perception's reality. When I look at somebody in the room and I'll be like, oh, I got her story down. And then I get up and that person gets up and I hear the story and I'm like, oh my God, I can't believe this. So now, having learned that, I keep moving forward and recognizing that that's my opportunity. Learn from everything. Everything is an opportunity. That's all it is. It doesn't have to be a mistake. It doesn't have to be wrong. It doesn't have to be bad. It can just simply be an opportunity for growth. And that's where I am, and I guess God's done having me speak. So thank you all for being here.
And any questions, comments, or...